The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now, you're multitasking. But what if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. So multitask right now. Get your quote now at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, I just think the biggest thing is where we are. I mean, it's again, we got to remember when you bring an entity that has, you know, the number, the contract number, and the impact it's going to have, it's going to change exactly what we're trying to do right now. And that's the thing that we decided in terms of where we wanted to go. When we had our discussions, you know, as a group, we talked about what we felt and how we feel about it. And we felt that going forward with what we've got with Sam and Jacoby now, we feel we can do that because of the guys that we have as playmakers. You know, because again, when you bring in a player with a big number, it impacts you. And you have to now, what do you have to give up? You know, who do you have to let go? And so that's a big thought for us. And it was something we didn't want to have to do in terms of letting specific players go that we brought in for a specific reason.
Ron Rivera explaining to reporters on Tuesday the decision to not pursue Lamar Jackson. Now, look, I always thought if they did, it was going to be an ownership thing anyway. And if the owner wasn't in the process of selling the team, who knows? Maybe he would have considered trying to get Lamar Jackson. But the football operation, a year after, they called every team, literally every team, looking to see if their starting quarterback was available in trade, because the year before they felt they got burned by the Matthew Stafford inside job between the Rams and the Lions, because it was an inside job between the Rams
yeah,
and the Lions. That's exactly why they got burned. But now they've pivoted. They've done a 180. They're all in with Sam Howell. They're all in with cheaper quarterback that allows us to keep all these guys around him. We don't want to disrupt this plan that we've hatched just because Lamar Jackson is available. We're sticking to our guns. We're sticking to our plan. We're moving forward with Sam Howell. And I get it. I understand it. You know, objectively, Sam Howell can't hold a candle to Lamar Jackson. But I understand the reasoning for the Commanders to not pursue Lamar Jackson, from the standpoint of what you have to pay him, what it does to your salary cap, and
right,
also the draft capital that you give up. You know, that never gets discussed with what the Browns did. We talked about it yesterday.
I know.
We focus so much on the contract. The Browns gave up 3 first-round picks and much more
right,
to get Deshaun Watson. Those are young core players, potentially, that get paid a small amount of money for at least 3 years.
Exactly.
That help become the nucleus of your present and future of your team. That's gone now.
Right.
That's gone. So even more eggs in the quarterback's basket when you do something like that to go out and get an established name player.
I mean, yes. You said it all right. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And, okay, and the big thing is too, all right, and again, I'm going to state this again so the haters of the world shut up, all right? I want Lamar Jackson to be paid, and he deserves to be paid. But this is where the agent would have helped. He would have gotten Washington's radar before the year and let him know, hey, things aren't moving that great with Baltimore. Start to plan accordingly. He might be available. See, most teams didn't even think it was going to come to this. They had no inklings of where it was. So there was never a warning of, hey, we might be able to get Lamar. Let's plan differently here down the stretch. That couldn't happen, Because nobody, I mean, we saw some coaches at the end of the year, well, he'll never be available. That's not going to happen. Some coaches said that. But, you know, obviously that's where an agent would have called, it could happen. We're making no progress in our contract negotiations. And that's where it stinks. But, yeah, you said it right. And I think you add that into what I'm talking about. Some of these teams got a little too far down the road in their planning, and they can't back out of it now, too. I think that's a factor in this.
One of the teams that we thought made plenty of sense was the Atlanta Falcons. I said yesterday that if Lamar Jackson had an agent who would have activated the trade me Ravens message last year, yeah, right after the Deshaun Watson trade happened, the Falcons may have been a suitor. The Dolphins could have been a suitor. Arthur Blank addressed the interest or lack thereof that the Falcons have in Lamar Jackson yesterday, said the owner of the Falcons, different player, different time. This was in relation to Deshaun Watson last year, Lamar Jackson this year. You have a winner, an MVP in the league. There's no question he's one of the top quarterbacks in the league. Looking at it objectively, I'd say there's some concern over how long he can play his style of game. Hopefully a long time. But he's missed 5-6 games each of the last 2 years. Each game counts a lot in our business. That's an articulation of things we've seen and heard reporters say in recent weeks. To have an owner of a team come out and say,
yeah, it's a big,
what
big
everyone
statement.
Else has been thinking,
right.
I mean, that's clear. And that pushes it away from, look, this is a time when the union is watching very carefully for any sign of collusion. Last week, you and I think, came to a consensus that the collusive effect of the reaction to the Deshaun Watson deal is just one of many factors in a stew that tells teams, yeah, one at a time, one after another, this isn't our guy. And I think that's the case for the Falcons.
Yeah.
A lot of factors that go into it.
Right.
And one of the factors is we just don't want to roll the dice on a guy who may be on the front end of the back end of his prime, if
right.
that makes any sense.
Yeah.
He's not at the back end yet,
right.
but he's closer. He's close. He's on the back nine of his prime. He's still got years left,
yep.
but who knows? And this injury issue, December 21, December 22, it's if you don't take that seriously now, then shame on you if you give the guy a bunch of money. Those are all real considerations. Those are real concerns. I still think that the Falcons should want him. I think it's worth the risk. I think he electrifies the team. He fills the stadium. He makes them competitive. He makes them into a contender. But I'm not going to just reject completely
right.
the reasoning that Arthur Blank has articulated.
No, I think it's a very, you know, and I like how you're saying it. There's a stew of stuff that are leading to this. It's not just one thing. And it's not just some conspiracy to screw over Lamar Jackson. It's not. Yeah, the guaranteed contract thing, of course, is a huge issue. But also, yeah, I think everybody's a little bit scared. Lamar's kind of the first of his kind here where we're going, wait, you know, running was the main thing. And, man, he plays an aggressive style of football, and he's taken a lot of hits already. And I do think that, yeah, there's, like, a lot of teams in football are like, no, I'd like to, you know, I like Lamar, but I want somebody else to try that experiment. I don't want to try it. I'm not sure. I can't do that. It's a little too risky, right? And I think that's where they are. Wait, we're going to pay a groundbreaking contract to a guy who's missed 10 games over the last 2 years. It does look like he's not quite as fast as he was 2 years ago, right? And, you know, we don't know how sustainable this is. And he wants a guaranteed contract. See, that's where it doesn't line up. And I can totally understand teams being scared of that aspect there. So that's where, again, that's another part of this whole discombobulation, dysfunction, everything around this whole subject right now.
Well, and that's a point that I've had people make to me from time to time. If you bring him in, you potentially have to change your entire offense to suit him, like the Ravens have done. Now, you could argue, no, you don't have to. The Ravens chose to do it. You can use an offense where Lamar Jackson passes more because he can pass. The
right.
Ravens are just giving into this temptation to take advantage of his supreme athletic ability when it comes to running with the football. Now, whether or not he's still the best in the NFL, you and I would both say it's Justin Fields.
Right.
But he's still pretty damn good
exactly.
at running with the football.
Yep.
But it would impact your offense. That's just another factor. Again, it's many factors that go into play here. But and by the way, it'll be interesting to see what Calais Campbell has to say about Lamar Jackson and the Falcons now that Calais Campbell has agreed to terms reportedly to join Atlanta, because we know Calais Campbell is a big Lamar Jackson proponent. He's played with him. Maybe he's got the persuasiveness to change some minds,
to knock on some doors, to ask to meet with Mr. Blank and explain to Mr. Blank how Lamar Jackson could help the team. Not that that's enough to make a difference. It'll just be interesting to see whether and to what extent Calais Campbell chimes in on this plan. But obviously, Campbell heard something he liked or he wouldn't have signed with the Falcons. So the bottom line is a former Lamar Jackson teammate is now in Atlanta. I don't think it changes things after what we heard yesterday from Arthur Blank.
No, I don't know if it does either. I don't. I think Atlanta is just continuing down the road of what we see them doing consistently. They're one of these teams that's just going to be – they're all about size, big physicality, going to beat your ass up front, and that's how they want to play football. And they've, you know, Calais Campbell adds to that. He can do still got some value. It's unbelievable, Calais Campbell, what he's doing. Hall of Fame defensive tackle, and then he's got a little versatility because of the 3-4 and the 4-3 stuff he can do, Mike. So I understand them liking him, and you know this might be the last year, but he's still got a good year or two left in him for sure.
Now Lamar Jackson apparently saw some of the things that were out there about him, the Arthur Blank comments. And, you know, I don't think we have Odell Beckham Jr. on the rundown today. Odell Beckham Jr. just showed up at the league meetings. He did what we said Lamar Jackson should do. Just show up. Everybody's there. Just go. Just be there. Engage these people in face-to-face conversations. You're representing yourself. Agents are there. They're there with the power brokers as they're gathered. That would have been a great move by Lamar Jackson. But as he becomes more active in this exercise in self-representation, he took to social media last night, and he pushed back on the idea that he's an injury risk. He had a couple of very interesting tweets. First one, I don't remember me sitting out on my guys week one against the Jets to week 12 against the Broncos. How come all of a sudden I sit out because of money, in which I could have gotten hurt at any time within that time frame? When we know the Super Bowl has been on my mind since April of 2018, what he's saying there is I didn't hold out. I could have held out. I could have said to the Ravens, I'm not showing up for training camp on my fifth-year option. I'm not playing for $23 million. I want my contract. I refuse to play. Or if he was going to shy away from playing, if he was going to have what they call the blue flu, where you pretend to be sick and you're not sick, you just can't play. Oh, my hamstring. Oh, my stomach. Oh, whatever injury you want to embellish or flat out fabricate. He didn't do that. He was actually injured. Once he was injured, the question was, when is he coming back? And it wasn't helpful to him that, you know, guys like John Harbaugh were suggesting he could come back from it.
Yeah,
he could come back from it. Oh, it's not a season ender. No, he'll be back. And there was stuff out there about whether or not he could play with an injured PCL. Was he facing further injury risk if he played with an injured PCL? And the narrative was he's not facing further injury. So there's been this idea that he tapped out because of his contract, that he didn't come back because of his contract, this is where it gets complicated, because either he didn't come back because he was truly injured and he is injury prone and we need to be concerned, or he didn't come back because of his contract and that's a different issue, that's a different explanation.
Yeah.
Bottom line is he didn't come back.
Right.
And I understand he didn't hold out, but he suffered an injury, and there's enough out there that makes you think the Ravens, coaching staff, players wanted him back, thought he could come back, and he didn't. And that's just there.
Yeah,
I don't know
there.
What it means to another team, but it's just there.
It is there. I think that is less concerning than the actual injury, right? I think the injuries are going to concern teams more than anything. I think, like, I don't question Lamar. You know, I get it. I thought maybe he was going to come back and play too. But, like, I as far as competitive and want to play and do all that, if he was close to 100%, he would have played. If he was anywhere in that range. This is the guy that is playing on the beach diving over jet skis. And, like, I don't think he knows any other way except play, go, play. That's what I do. That's what I want to be. So, I'm not going to buy the, you know, sat out because, oh, wait, I'm a little banged up. I could have played, but I want a new contract. I'm just not going to buy it. And nothing about the human being in that department has told me that would be the case so far. All the guy ever wants to do is play and go. So I'm going to take him at his word that he wasn't good enough to play. And I heard that from people down there. You know that at the end of the year. I was telling you. I had people telling me he was week 17, 18. He was sitting, had a huge knee still. It was a balloon. So that's where I also will believe him, just because I kind of heard it through the grapevine as well.
He also said this on Twitter late last night. Let's get real. I'd rather have a 100% PCL than go out there and play horrible, forcing myself to put my guys in a bad situation. Now, that's selfish to me. Someone responded by saying the conversation isn't whether you sat with 100% PCL. The conversation is you sat out with a 90% PCL, which others would play on at a risk of further injury. Same as how many don't think you want a fully guaranteed deal but still think you'd want like $200 million fully guaranteed. I guess what this person is suggesting is he's playing games with semantics.
Yeah.
Lamar said, 90% is 100% to me. I wasn't there at all. So are you going to continue to question me after this statement as well? So what Lamar seems to be saying is he wasn't even at 90%.
Right.
It's 90%
he would have played.
90% he could have played.
Right.
He's not at 90% he would have played. Now, look, again, this is where it would have helped to have an agent. But I firmly believe, and I've supported him from the get-go. I said this at the time. When you don't have your long-term contract, when you don't have the financial security that you've earned, why would you go out there at anything less than 100%? Why would you go out there if you have any concern? We talked about the Brandon Marshall angst when you were his teammate in Denver as he was entering the final game of a meaningless regular season where you weren't making the playoffs, but he had to go play, and he was on the brink of getting the contract that he had earned. How do you get yourself in the right mindset to go out there and throw caution to the wind when you don't have the financial security? So I would have... And I use this example all the time. This is where an agent's valuable. An agent gives the player the advice that the agent would give his or her son, brother, uncle, nephew, whoever, anyone I care about. This is the advice I'm giving. I would have said, don't play. You don't have your contract. Don't play unless you're 100%. So, again, when you don't have an agent to make the case for you, you're put in an awkward position where it looks like you're making excuses when you try to talk these things through and get people to understand where you're coming from. I understand where he's coming from. I don't have my long-term financial protection. I'm going back and I'm playing with nothing by way of security. Regardless of how we got to this point, I have no security right now. Why would I take that risk when there's no protection for me on the back end?
Yeah, it's perfectly, you know, it's fine. It's perfectly fine, you know, to do that. If you're not, why take that risk? I'm not mad at players for that. It's hard. It's a hard game when you're 100% healthy. It's really hard when you're not totally healthy and then you want to be somebody to go lay it out on the line. And, yeah, they're, you know, on the precipice of breaking it, you know, breaking the bank and setting their family up for generational wealth. It's a tough thing. I wouldn't even be mad at him if he was 88% or 90% and he didn't play. I won't be, but again, I don't think that's the way he is. I think he is, like he said in the suite, if he's 90%, he would have gone. He would have done it, but he wasn't there. But it's a tough situation, and it's one of the unspoken truths of the NFL a little bit with guys at the end of their contract. You know, we get a lot of talk about, oh, this coach is coaching in his last year of his contract. This is unfair to him. He's in a dead year. And it's just like with the player, it's just like, screw him. Screw them. Go out there, lower your head, and get in another car crash. And it's part of the business, and it, you know, is definitely in players' minds.
The tweets that I saw last night before going to bed caused me, for the first time, to consider something. I want to sound it out with you. I want to talk it out with you. I'm not sold on it yet.
Okay.
And I'm not saying it's going to happen. Okay. But I remember back during the week that we took off after the Super Bowl, I did a few episodes of PFTPM, and somebody asked me at that point, is there a chance Lamar Jackson sits out the 2023 season? My first reaction was, he's not sitting out. And then when I started thinking about it, it's like, you know, there aren't many dominoes that have to fall to get to the point where he doesn't play in 2023. And it's as simple as no other team makes a play for him, which is what's happened. The Ravens and Lamar Jackson don't work out a long-term contract. We get past the middle of July where all he can do is play on a one-year deal. The current tender offer is $32.4 million. He says to the Ravens, I'm not playing, if you're only paying me $32.4 million, I'm just not going to play this year. It's not a huge leap of logic to get to the point where Lamar Jackson sits out 2023. I want to look at it more broadly. When you look at where he is right now.
Yeah.
When you look at how he's conducted his business, and I'm not criticizing, I'm trying to glean from how he's conducted his business, how he may conduct his business in the future. That's the only predictor we have. And I think one of the realities is we all kind of accept that Lamar's very unpredictable. We don't know what he's going to do. We don't know what he really wants. And part of that is he doesn't have somebody speaking on his behalf. So it's a mystery We don't have that. We're starting to see some of it, but we haven't historically had it. So when you consider, for example, the fully guaranteed contract, once a fully guaranteed contract or $200 million fully guaranteed, some huge amount of money, whatever it is.
Yeah.
He wants what he wants, and he's not going to give in, and he's never going to give in. And it becomes a point of pride. That stubbornness becomes ego, becomes pride, becomes I'm not going to give in. Then you've got the agent thing. I'm not going to hire an agent. And he feels like he's getting pushed to hire an agent. What does he do? He doesn't give in. He gets more determined to not hire an agent. And I think he's more determined than ever after all the stuff that happened last week with Ken Francis, and he may feel like the union's working against him now, and the agents are trying to put pressure on him, and everybody's trying to paint him into this corner, and he refuses to give in. So now what do we know? What did we learn this week? We learned that he asked to be traded by the Ravens. Does that mean he doesn't want to play for the Ravens anymore? Does that mean he's done with the Ravens? He's asked them to trade him. Is he done? Has he decided, I'm done with the Ravens? If that's the case, Chris, I don't look at just 2023 anymore. You look at no team out there that's interested in him. No team out there is making a run at him. If he sits out 23, what do we do next year?
Hurts
what
his
ice
value.
Is going to break?
Yeah.
What ice is going to break between this year and next year to get him to be more reasonable in his expectations?
Right.
I just think that in a weird roundabout way, there's a chance, and I'm not saying it's going to happen, but when you look at all these factors, nobody's interested. He doesn't want to play for the Ravens. He's not getting an offer that he's happy with. We can't find a way. The old Venn diagram with this two circles. We can't find a way to even get him in the same zip code. I think there's a chance he never plays again. I think there's a chance the train keeps rolling without him in 23 and he doesn't play. And then next year, again, how do we break this? If he doesn't hire an agent, if nothing changes, if he continues to be stubborn, if he continues to dig in, when does it change? It reminds me of Colin Kaepernick. It's different.
Yeah.
Very different context. But at the core, you've got somebody who's stubborn and wants what he wants, and you've got a group of people who are equally stubborn and want what they want, and there's no middle ground.
Yeah.
Until there's a middle ground, this guy's not playing.
I think you bring up some good points. I mean, gosh, I hope it doesn't get to that point, but like the way you lay it out and what we've seen, yeah, I hear what you're saying there. Could you see it going that road down that road of like, oh man, maybe he's not playing in 2023? I'm not gonna lie, I don't think you're crazy in saying that. I think there's a lot of people that think that. I don't think that does him any good. It's only gonna hurt his value. Now it's gonna be, wait, you missed 10 games the last 2 years. You didn't play last year. Right. You're not getting younger or faster. So why would you do that? It's only going to hurt
him. Who's going to tell him that?
I know.
Who's telling him that?
That's a great question, Mike.
Because if we say it, we're haters.
Yeah.
Right?
Eye roll emoji.
If we say it, the clip gets posted with a LeBron gif or something else, that we're just haters. We don't care about him. We're just haters by saying you're going to hurt your value if you sit out. And it's only going to be harder to get what you want next year. And you're going to be more determined to wait for what you're owed. And then you don't play in 2024. And then it's even harder in 2025. Look, I don't think this is a crazy concept given where we are, that this guy never plays again. Barring a dramatic change in his attitude or the team's attitudes, I think it's something we at least have to take seriously as a possibility. Not a probability.
I hear you.
Not a likelihood.
I hear you.
But it's on the radar screen now.
Well, yeah. Or he's going to have to lower his expectations at some point or the number.
But he never has.
I know.
He hasn't.
Mike, I'm. You're right. There's nothing to say that he'll do that. It's really incredible. You know, it's incredible that, you know, too, when I think about it at a base level, right, and my wife even said this to me over the last week. She's like, man, he's just obsessed with this Deshaun Watson contract, huh? And you know, sometimes we get so deep in the weeds in so many different subjects, you just get back to the base root of the whole thing. When she said that, I was like, yeah, you're right. Basically, that's all it is. It's this obsession of this contract, of Deshaun Watson and what he thinks he should get, and he deserves more. And I don't know if there's a personal competitiveness with Watson or whatever there, but it's just amazing we are where we are. And, you know, we know that he's been offered a contract that's top of the market, as good as anything we've ever seen except for maybe one contract. So that's where I think as fans, we just go, I don't know what the hell's going on, and I don't know what to expect from Lamar Jackson.
Well, let's put it in a different context that we can all relate to. I understand why Lamar Jackson feels the way he does. Let's say that these guys are salesmen working for the same company, okay? And they're both really good salesmen. But one guy won the award for Salesman of the Year. Top Salesman of the Year, most valuable salesman in the entire company. The other guy's got 25 lawsuits alleging that he engaged in sexual misconduct when he was at the massage parlor from time to 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 time. And he gets the richest contract that the company has ever handed out to anyone, any place, any time. And the guy who was named Salesman of the Year is just wants to be traded the same, not better. Just treat me the same as the guy who's never been Salesman of the Year and has been sued 25 times for allegedly engaging in sexual misconduct. And I know that that doesn't matter to his playing ability, but we're talking about a very public business where things like that you would think would be a factor for a team like the Browns. I can understand why Lamar Jackson is tormented by that.
Yeah.
I sure as hell would be.
I get it. I'm when you explain it like that, yeah. But also, I think you got to get in a little deeper in there and go, okay, now this same guy is in a part of that same business where they messed it up and they realize they're desperate and they can't run the business without him. So he got lucky in that department, right? And yeah, we think Lamar's really good and awesome and all that, but the other guy over here too has actually won more playoff games than Lamar, and we think there's a more sustainable future for the way he plays. He's going to give us business for a longer period of time. It's a safer bet. So there's that aspect too. And I'm just trying to be fair in the conversation. I totally hear what you're saying. You're right. There should be frustration on Lamar. It's just a lot of stew again that's gone into this whole mess here.
And I understand why Deshaun Watson got the deal he got. We've talked about it before.
Yeah.
The planets lined up perfectly for him. He had agents who were actively working the channels. He came out a year in advance and said, I'm done with the Texans. They put together the competition with the four teams, the Saints, the Panthers, the Falcons, the Browns. They kicked the Browns to the curb at the perfect time after they pissed off Baker Mayfield and the Browns got desperate. Look, if Lamar Jackson had been available then, the Browns would have given him 5 years, $230 million, fully guaranteed. They would have done it for him. They were desperate at that point
exactly.
to get a difference-making
exactly.
quarterback.
That's exactly
Deshaun
right.
Deshaun Watson was in the right place at the right time.
Right, right.
And if Lamar Jackson had been in that place at that time, he's the one who would have gotten it from the Browns.
You need to almost write an article on that. I think that would hit home with a lot of people. I really do. I think it would be one where, you know, again, the people that don't watch the show and then just click on, you know, profootballtalk.com and that would be an article, I think, that if you laid that out that way and just reverse it, you'd go, here, wait, the Lamar would have got paid if that situation was that way. You know, again, you know, to use your company thing too here, you know, where I hear collusion and collusion and collusion and collusion, it's like, okay, one guy's making this. I get this. You're shopping yourself around to all these companies going, wait, I want the greatest contract ever, right? I want to go to ESPN. I want to go to ABC. I want to go to CBS. I want to go to NBC. I'm asking for the greatest contract ever as a TV analyst that does a morning talk show. Then they don't want to give me what I want, Mike. They don't see my value. Damn, it's collusion. They're colluding against me, Mike. All I'm asking for is the greatest contract in TV history for this job. Damn, it's collusion. That's where I push back against this narrative collusion out there. That's where I don't like that. That's my only problem with the whole thing there.
Right. But we can't forget what happened last year after the Browns gave Deshaun Watson a five-year, $230 million fully guaranteed contract. And you have a parade of people, including Arthur Blank, yeah. who now doesn't want Lamar Jackson, and Steve Bisciotti, the owner of the Ravens, who doesn't want to pay Lamar Jackson the fully guaranteed contract, chastising the Browns. And Peter King and I were talking about this on Friday. The Browns insisted they didn't get the cold shoulder at the league meetings last year. Peter says, oh, yes, they did get the cold shoulder. So the seeds of the collusion were planted last year, and it became one of the factors. It's not all the factors, but it is one of the factors because they have a business model they want to respect. That person who's out there looking for that greatest contract of all time wants a structure that they've collectively decided they don't want to provide. It's part of it. It's not all of it. There's a lot more to it. It's a very complicated situation. And again, why do you guys keep talking about it? Because it's a pretty important story. It's unprecedented, and there are constant developments. We wouldn't have even talked about Lamar Jackson today if he doesn't start posting the tweets last night around midnight.
Right.
Now we may have mentioned the Arthur Blank stuff, but look, he is dug in. They are dug in. There is no middle ground. Somebody is going to have a Saul on the road to Damascus epiphany here, where they completely and dramatically change their viewpoint, change their attitude, change their posture for Lamar Jackson to get on a field. And the next relevant battle line will be when July 17 comes and goes and the Ravens say, hey, here's your contract, 1 year, 32-4. Training camp starts next Tuesday. See you there. And he says, no, I'm not playing for 32-4. What can they do then to bridge that gap? And is his message not, I want more money to show up? Is his message, I already told you guys I'm done with you. I'm not playing for you. If that's the message,
I don't know where he goes. That's the problem.
We may never see him on a football field again.
Yeah, that's the problem.
We may never see him on a football field again.
That's where it goes. You know, I don't know. But, yeah, I hear what you're saying there, and hopefully it doesn't come to that. And hopefully at some point they can bridge the gap and Lamar can show the ability to adjust or not be as stubborn as you've talked about.
All right, let's take a break. When we return, things got a little interesting yesterday on the status of the Mary Jo White investigation and what Jerry Jones knows or what he thinks he knows about what Mary Jo White knows. We'll discuss that when PFT Live continues right after this.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
The Premier League is built on hope. The hope of discovering a new star.
It doesn't take long.
The hope of rewriting history. And the hope of continuing a dynasty.
Unstoppable week after week.
This is the Premier League on NBC, USA, and Peacock.
For the world's greatest athletes,
this is the showdown we've been waiting for.
There is nothing like competing on the world's biggest stage.
It's a world record again! Goal! Unbelievable!
And when that stage is Paris, anything can happen.
I have never seen anything like this.
How about that?
An Olympics unlike any other.
What a performance!
The Paris Olympics, this summer on NBC and streaming on Peacock.
Mary Jo White investigation still going on. Are you in favor of them releasing the report despite if Dan Snyder is the owner or not?
Yes.
Why?
Because I know everything in the report.
He believes that they should release the report, and then we ask why. He says because I know everything in the report.
Well, that would be impossible, since the only person I know of that knows anything about the investigation is Mary Jo White and her counterparts. So. I don't know any of those things. Mary Jo White is a professional. She's incredibly thorough. She's not giving access to anybody. So I'm comfortable on that point.
Uh-oh, spaghetti.
Wow. Awkward.
That was awesome.
Hashtag awkward. So, and look, who knows what the truth really is. But let me reiterate a point that I make from time to time. When the NFL goes out and hires an independent investigator, it is not independence in the classic sense. It is not somebody who is going to do their own thing on their own time and hold everything secret and not say anything and give the outcome whenever he or she feels like it. And it's going to be whatever it is regardless of the disruption that it may cause for the organization. That's not how it works. She's not independent. She's outside. She's still working for the NFL. She's had multiple assignments in recent years with the NFL. They are exactly the kind of client that if you're a lawyer, you want to represent. They have the money to pay big bills. They have big problems. And there's an art to properly managing the client relationship so you keep getting the work. That's how it works in the legal business. A lawyer who has nothing to do isn't a lawyer. You have to have work to do. And the best lawyers and the smartest lawyers know how to get the best and the most lucrative work. So is it impossible to think that she's provided some updates to Jeff Pasch, the general counsel of the NFL? Is it impossible
absolutely
to think? Right?
Yes.
I mean, yes. Yes, this isn't some scientific experiment that is happening in a sarcophagus somewhere and there's no way that anyone knows what's going on. Of course there's going to be conversation. This thing's been lingering for 14 months. And why is it lingering for 14 months? Is it because this is such a tough nut to crack? Or they're using it as the ultimate carrot and stick for Daniel Snyder? And this is what dawned on me yesterday, Chris, because Roger Goodell said they're still going to release the report no matter what. Now, when Dan Snyder announced back in November an intention to sell the team, I heard from somebody in the league, not league office, but in the league structure, say, we're never going to see the Mary Jo White investigation, are we? They're just going to brush it under the rug now. I have a different take because they've committed to making it public. I believe, and I know this is very cynical, but I worked in that world. I know how this goes. I've seen it happen. There's a lot of discretion that can get exercised. There's a lot of interpretations that can be applied to a given set of facts. You can believe one person. You can believe the other person. You can believe everyone. You can believe no one. You have a lot of discretion as the one who's doing the investigation as to how you get to the other side. So if Dan Snyder leaves, if he sells, if he's gone, and we got a report we're going to make public, what do you think it's going to do? You think it's going to crap all over Dan Snyder or it's going to exonerate him? He's out of our lives now. Why do we want to put out a report saying he did all these bad things when we don't have to deal with this guy anymore? So, yeah, the report's going to have one tone and collection of content if he's gone and if he digs his heels in and if he says, I'm not going, if he does the whole Leo DiCaprio thing and grabs a microphone and says, I'm not effing leaving, then that report may go a different way. That's where this is right now, I believe. I don't know it, but I believe it based on my own experience dealing with the NFL, dealing with the legal profession. So yeah, we'll release the report because if he goes, it goes one way. If he stays, it goes another way.
It makes sense, Mike. I can get behind how you explain that. That makes a lot of sense. What would the, if he goes, what would the NFL, you know, they'd be hurting themselves if they went scorched earth on Daniel Snyder anyway.
Yes.
Right. It's going to make them look bad.
He turns around and sues them.
Right. Yeah, he turns around and sues them. It makes them look incompetent in the fact that they couldn't control one of the 32 owners and, you know, the shield isn't as buttoned up as you think. But, yeah, I get it, kind of dangling it, you know, over as a little bit of a, you know, a threat, a chip that they have that they're waiting to cash in. And that's where it was kind of funny. I mean, yeah, first off, just Jerry. I would think Jerry knows a lot about this. Like you said, it's been going on for a long time. What do you, these guys are, they're in the know. I would think Jerry knows a little. I would think Mr. Kraft knows a little. I think John Mara knows a little. I think all the major power players that we look in, you know, the hierarchy of ownership there have a feel of what's going on in this whole thing. It just looked like Roger Goodell put on his lawyer hat and was like, wait, we're not supposed to sound like that yet, and there could be some legal consequences to that, so that's impossible. I mean, that's how it looked. That's why it was awkward. But, yeah, that makes a lot of sense of what you're saying, Mike. I can get that.
It's one of the reasons he makes however many million a year. We used to know how many million it was because when the NFL was a tax-exempt trade organization, their paperwork had to be filed, and we saw how much he made. Who knows what it is now, but he's on the verge of getting a new contract, and this is one of the things he does best. He gets in those settings at least four times a year, and on behalf of the people behind the curtain, he keeps it all on an even keel and doesn't say anything that creates a major problem. But the reality is, Mary Jo White is giving them what they want when they want it. That's how you continue to get those assignments. This isn't some scientific exercise. This isn't some pursuit for justice and truth. This is the NFL trying to solve a problem. And Jerry Jones, of all the owners out there who would not want a precedent to be created that could be used against them in the future, which is exactly why they've been protecting Dan Snyder. They haven't been protecting him because they like him, because they don't, as far as I've gleaned over the years. They are concerned, some of them, some more than others, that we're creating a path for a disgruntled employee or anyone who has anything negative about us that they know to say just enough to spark an investigation, and then the investigator shows up and starts digging around, and God knows what the investigator finds. I mean, look at all the stuff that has come out of a problem that started with mistreatment of female employees in the Commanders organization over an extended period of time, which is bad enough in and of itself. But the mere fact of investigating it has caused all sorts of other things to come to fruition. Financial irregularities, stuff that get people not just sued, but thrown in jail. So you don't want that possibility. You don't want that pathway for someone who doesn't like you, who has an axe to grind against you, whether or not their grievance is real or imagined. You don't want them to have a way to take your life and turn it upside down the way that Snyder's life has been turned upside down. And when you just pay attention to some of the news that's been out there about the Cowboys recently, I mean, Jerry Jones has got sued this week for defamation by a woman who sued him last year to establish that he's her father. And then there's another lawsuit that was revived recently brought by a woman who claims that he kissed her against her will at AT&T Stadium during a football game in 2018. So there's stuff out there that could stick to Jerry Jones at some point. And if this Dan Snyder situation becomes the Dan Snyder rule, he's the first one that has to worry about his house caving in. The guy who's never going to sell the Cowboys could be in the same situation that Dan Snyder is if the Snyder standard would ever get applied to him, and if Mary Jo White would ever be investigating everything and anything he's ever done.
Yeah, I'm not going to fight back on anything you said there. I think that's a very real thing. You know, just setting precedent or opening up a can of worms for the future on all of us has got to be on the radar for these owners, right? But they got to be happy nonetheless that, I mean, it seems like they're getting close to getting out of this, right? As far as, you know, Jerry Jones maybe having to worry about precedent or some other owner, whatever it may be. By all due accounts, right? I mean, it seems like Washington's getting sold. The Commanders are getting sold. It seems like Daniel Snyder's good with that, and that's the road we're going down here right now. So, you know, the owners, you know, the NFL, I'm sure they're happy.
And here's what was strange yesterday. And a lot of times things get reported with no context, no analysis, no discussion, no mention of the potential ramifications. ESPN yesterday, boom, first one. The Josh Harris Group has submitted a bid for $6 billion for the Washington Commanders and also characterized it as a bid that meets Daniel Snyder's asking price, which is different than what we had heard the asking price was. We had heard it was seven, now it's six. It's a fairly significant difference between seven and six. Then ESPN, a couple of hours later, reported that Canadian billionaire with lengthy Greek name that I'm going to miss a syllable or two if I try to remember it. I think it's Apostopoulos, I think, or Apostopoulos, I think, Apostopoulos. He's in for $6 billion too. So, okay, not $6.2 billion, $6 billion also. So you got two groups, Chris, bidding $6 billion each. What do you do now? What do you do? How do you choose? And this is the point I made yesterday, and I did it kind of tongue-in-cheek, but it's one of the things that I've said in the past. As somebody who tries to be an advocate for fans generally, all it takes to be an owner of a team is to be the one who had the money to buy the team. You don't have to know football. You don't have to be a good person. You don't have to be somebody who's going to be a good steward of the organization. You don't have to mean it when you say we're trying to win a Super Bowl every year. You don't have to treat it like anything other than your own personal piggy bank. Right? How do you choose between $6 billion here and $6 billion here? And if I was a fan of the Commanders, I sure as hell would hope that he sells it to the one that's going to be the better owner for the best interest of the team and really wants the team to thrive and isn't viewing it as some investment or whatever. Somebody who wants this team to be great and knows how to get there. Now, we may not know which one that is, but I sure hope, if all things are equal, it goes to the one who's going to be the better owner.
Yeah, I definitely. I mean, you know, the there's some value, some competitive, tangible value to the owner and the money he's got, the cash he's got, and, you know, his willingness to take some risk, right? I mean, you and I know a very real part of, you know, free agency and big contracts a lot of the times is, hey, the team who's got cash at hand right now that can pay it. And there's the big-time owners don't have to worry. The Stan Kroenkes of the world, that's why, hey, they signing bonus, signing bonus, signing bonus, sure, signing bonus, whatever, because it's just endless cash. But there's other owners that don't have that. So, yeah, to your point, that should be a very real thing if, you know, all is tied in that department. And then again, too, yeah, you want an owner as a fan that you just go, yeah, we understand it's a business, but, you know, you're really rich. So, you know, so what if it doesn't work out totally in your financial benefit here? We just, you know, try to put us in the best part to win. I know that's easier said than done when it's not your own money, but I think that's, as a fans, that's kind of what we want from our owners.
And I really do wonder, and I guess I should put on my reporter hat and go find out, how do you break the tie between two bids of $6 billion? Is that their maximum? Drop dead, that's it, not a penny more bid? Because that's what Josh Harris was willing to do with the Broncos last year. He would have paid $5 if he would have got it for $5, but he knew what was going to happen. He bids $5, and the Walton Penner Group comes in at $5.1. I'm not going higher than $5, so I'm not putting $5 on the table. He's put $6 on the table. Apostopoulos put $6 on the table. Now, what happens next? Do we just sit back and wait for Bezos to show up with $7? Is Snyder going to sell to Bezos? Like, I don't think that there's the kind of clarity we need, because one of these two is going to emerge. Is it going to be an auction? Is it going to be a coin flip? What's it going to be? Or is Bezos going to show in and just blow them all away? Let's take a break. When we return, the NFL is pushing for a change that one very influential owner calls abusive, but they're still pushing for it. We'll discuss that next here on PFT Live.
Our season ticket holders to people who fill our stadiums every week. People have gotten used to going from Sunday afternoon to Sunday night. That doesn't mean that they like it. This year, we can be flexed to Monday night, which I think is really inconsiderate to our ticket holders. But to flex a game back to Thursday night, to me, is just abusive. And I am adamantly opposed to it. I think it didn't get enough votes today, but he'll probably be visited in May.
Clap it up.
John Mara.
The G-Man.
Let's go, Giants.
Way to go,
hey,
John
man,
Mara.
I gotta, listen, break ranks. Speak truth. It's abusive to the fans. And if the NFL does Thursday night flexing, the message to the fans is, we don't give a shit about you.
Especially the ones in the
stadium.
That's
the message.
Especially the ones like, don't go to the stadium. We don't give a shit about you. No. Just watch on TV.
Right. But you're right. They care about the fans who watch on TV because they want to have maximum fans on TV because that's maximum dollars for the rights fees. And again, this is all about propping up streaming because streaming is the future and they're going to be there before we know it. But John Mara saying what's right, doing what's right, and he's one of the most influential owners in the sport. Now, is that enough to get through to Roger Goodell once Roger Goodell gets something in his head that he wants to do because he wants to make Jeff Bezos happy and he wants to have this streaming horizon? And we know how quickly a horizon can become reality. Here's Roger Goodell yesterday talking about the decision to table Thursday night flexing, which is something he clearly still wants to have happen. Have a listen.
There isn't anybody in that room, anybody in any of our organizations who don't put our fans first. That's really important. Obviously, providing the best matchups for our fans is part of what we do. That's part of what I think our scheduling has always focused on. So it's a very important thing for us to balance with the what I would call season ticket holders and the in-stadium audience. But we have millions of fans who also watch on television.
How would you respond to players who are concerned that maybe you're putting a broadcast partner on Amazon over their own interests in making some of these changes to Thursday Night Football?
I don't think we are putting Amazon over players' interests. You know, we've always been looking at the data with respect to injuries and the impact on players. that was drove our decisions throughout the first 12 or so years of Thursday night football and how it's evolved. And I think we have data that's very clear. It doesn't show higher injury rate, but we recognize shorter weeks. We went through this in COVID too. We had to have a lot of flexibility in those areas. So those are obviously different circumstances, but we work very closely on that. I hear from a lot of players directly too. They love the 10 days afterwards. In fact, they call it a mini bye. And so there's some benefits on that side. So you have different views. You want to consider all of them, but players have different views. Coaches have different views, and we have to try to balance all of that.
I remember back in the days when Richard Sherman was a player, not part of Thursday Night Football, and would refer to the process as a poop fest. There were some players that hated it, some players that loved it. It's an easier practice week, and we get 10 days off on the back end. Other players, hey, it's too much to turn around and play from Sunday and then play on Thursday. And even though they didn't pass the flexing, and it, Albert Breer has the informal votes of 22 yes, 8 no, 2 abstentions, so it's only 2 votes away. If those numbers are accurate, it's only 2 votes away from becoming a reality. So there aren't many arms that need to be twisted to give the commissioner what he wants. They have approved 2 teams or twice per year, short week, Sunday to Thursday. Now, every team can be asked up to twice. It used to be once. Now, any and every team can be asked up to twice to play Sunday and Thursday. And if they hide behind, Chris, this idea that the injury rate is no different, that is a misleading stat. Jeff Miller rattled that stat off last Friday when I asked him about whether or not the union agreed to this possible Thursday night flexing. Well, you know what? It's not a health and safety issue, Jeff said, because the injury rate's the same with a normal amount of rest and short amount of rest. And it's not enough to just look at how many injuries happen in the game. What about the players who could have played on Thursday who aren't able to play now on Thursday night? That isn't part of your factor that
They could have played Sunday and now
desire.
They can't play Thursday.
Right.
You mean?
They could have played Sunday and now they can't play Thursday. Right. They can't play. So they're not in this analysis of injury rate. And what do we know about the overall wear and tear?
Yeah, what
How
about
much
the next
does it
week?
Add when you're playing 17
right.
games?
Right.
Right. Right. You didn't get injured, but you're, you know, that injury that you're playing through doesn't feel any better now that you went out and played with a Toradol shot on Thursday night. So I just think it's unfair to focus only on that one fact. But they focus on it because it supports what they're going to do. And if we take it to the extreme, fine. Play Sunday, Monday. Play Sunday, Tuesday. How many days is too few? And how many times per year is too many to expect a guy to play on Sunday and then play on Thursday? And you know, my instinct meshes with what Roger Goodell said when he invoked what happened during the pandemic. Because I firmly believe, Chris, and I tweeted this yesterday, within 5 to 10 years, they're going to be playing games on Tuesday night and Wednesday night every week, and you and I are going to like it.
Yeah.
It's more games we can sit and watch.
Right.
And I think they're going to find a way around the rule that currently prevents them from broadcasting games on Friday nights and on Saturdays. I think at some point, hopefully in my lifetime, they're going to be playing NFL games every day of the week from the moment the season begins to the moment the season ends. And this Thursday night flex, this multiple short weeks, this is just more evidence. It's all out there. It's all staring us in the face. They want to push this toward a primetime game every day of the week, Chris.
I don't want to see football on Friday and Saturday. That should be for the sanctity of high school football and the NFL and college football. I'll say that. All right. The other days of the week, though, okay, I'm up for business. But this is, you know, one, I'm totally on with what John Mara said. Yeah, it's abusive to the fans. It is, especially, you know, all their talk about the in-game experience over the last few years. And now you're going to screw people over and change the day of a game 4 days earlier. Like I said yesterday, hey, I'm coming in on Friday to see the Giants play on Sunday. You know, we got a big flight. I paid thousands of dollars for me and my family to come to the game on Sunday. What? The game's the day before that now? Oh, crap, I can't go, and I'm losing thousands of dollars. It's abusive. It is. It's borderline abusive to the players. It is. More than one time a year, man, I don't know if I love that. I still think they got to figure out a formula here to where I wish there didn't have to be 4 days at all. My problem, you know, the injury thing, they can say all they want. We know, like players, it's tough on them. And I think a lot of the players will go, hey, I like the 10-day bye after it or whatever, the few days off, the extra weekend. Those are usually the young guys who are like, okay, I'm 23. I don't care that I got in a car crash on Sunday and Thursday. No big deal. It's not the older guys that always feel that way. And then the other thing, Mike, that we talk about a lot with the short week games that gets kind of swept under the rug in this conversation and was part of the problem last year, the quality of play is not as good. It's not. The players aren't able to lay it on the line the same way they are after they've had 7 days off and their body now feels fresh and ready to go. The game we've talked about, guys like Kyle Shanahan, Josh McDaniels, Andy Reid, they lose 3 days of creativity of let me come up with all these cool plays to screw over this defense and make this game fun and exciting. They lose that. Everything becomes basic. So that's where I wish they would just find a better formula. I wish they could do like we talked about. Team plays on Monday, you know, Monday night, and then they play the next Thursday or whatever. Find a way to not make it 4 days. That's, I think, going to be the best for everybody involved altogether.
Yeah. It's not happening because the injury rates are the same. Yeah. And it's going to be four days, 5 days, 6 days. I'm telling you, you're going to see they're going to find a way to come up with a schedule that has primetime games Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night, and we do have to take a break.
Okay.
We'll have more PFT Live right after this.
They'll be great. You know, it's funny. When I talked to Jalen after he had spoken with Mike, Jalen said, you know, Mike told me that he'll be the best head coach that he ever played for. And I said he might be that, but he'll definitely be the weirdest.
Oh, shots fired. Sean McVay and Mike McDaniel. And it's, you know, hey, Mike McDaniel, I don't want to say he's weird. He's unique. He's awesome.
He's quirky.
He makes us laugh all the time. And he's one of a kind. And he's authentic. And that's my advice to anyone at any point in time. Always be who you are. No matter who you are, you're going to be the best version of yourself if you just are who you are. All right. The NFL is what it is when it comes to the rule that allows a giant rugby maul to form on the middle of the field and push the quarterback toward a first down. Peter King has been someone who was against that. I agree with Peter on that point. The league has not addressed it yet. Here's Peter asking Sean McVay what he thinks about this ability to just line them up and shove them however many yards they need to gain.
It's something that you have to figure out how to defend when you're playing them. And if it does fit, it's like anything else. It's an extension of their offensive game plan. And so you could see they had some really cool complementary things that came off of that. But, you know, you knew in a lot of instances they were running that and they were effective with it. But it's something that we will look to implement in those specific situations. Like I think a lot of teams.
Do you think it belongs in football?
Yeah, oh, yeah, I do.
Wow. Well, I don't know. I think that maybe he had to say that. I think there's a, you know, football is, we can kill the sound on that. It's really driving me nuts. There's just an element of, you know, bravado, and you don't want to be perceived as somebody who's shying away from the physical realities of football. But this is something that's eventually going to get someone hurt, as he hinted. And this is a point Peter made last week. The defenses will adapt. What will they do to adapt? Is it going to get the quarterback hurt? Are you going to have Chris Jones flying over the top of the line and legally hitting the quarterback in the head and neck area because he's a runner at that point? So other teams are going to come up with ways to utilize it. Defenses are going to come up with ways to neutralize it. And just because it hasn't created a major injury now, this is what we talked about the other day.
Yeah.
They need to have some foresight. They need to be proactive. They need to see where the puck is moving, not where the puck currently is. Someone's going to get hurt as a result of this ability to just smush everybody together in a pile.
Yeah, I mean, that's my concern, you know. I mean, there's a part of me that does like it, but at the same time, when we talk about player safety in a lot of ways, that's where I just go, well, I don't know if that's fair to some of these defensive tackles and stuff who've got to be in there, right? And then added to the fact of, like, you know, the guys who can get a running start when it's okay now a stalemate, and then we got a guy, a big tight end that was 7 yards behind, he can have a running start and now come and crush a guy that's kind of stalemating Jalen Hurts as he's stuck there, right? They don't let linemen clean up the piles in the middle of the field after a 10-yard completion and there's kind of a scrum and people, they don't let them just come in and clean guys out that way. They've taken that out of the game. So that would be some of my concerns. But yeah, I don't know where this goes. But the player safety part is certainly the part that concerns me the most.
And what's going to happen is somebody's going to get hurt, and there's going to be a bunch of hand-wringing and a bunch of, we had no idea, we had no idea. The injury data didn't suggest this could happen. No, but your eyes did. Let's take a break. More PFT Live right after this. Calvin Ridley will be the first Jaguars player to wear the number zero. New member of the team, recently reinstated by the NFL. The NFL agreed yesterday to allow players to wear number zero. Now, we were going to do a draft. We're just going to kick around some of the iconic numbers in the NFL, because I don't know that zero is all that iconic. Why not go double zero? Ken Burrow, Jim Otto. Why not two zeros? I think two zeros is more effective than one zero. And Chris, there's a question for you to ask me that apparently has something to do with the guy whose name I just mentioned.
Yes, it does. All right. I do like the single zero, though. I see it in college. It's, you know, it's a single digit number that it does look good. Double zero kind of looks like 88. It's a lot on your jersey. So I'm not going to say I dislike that look. All right. But legendary Raider center Jim Otto is the only Hall of Famer to wear double zero. The only Hall of Famer to wear a single zero was Wilbur Pete Henry, who played in the 1920s for the Canton, and now you have to figure out who he play for. Look at that big sucker.
That guy looks like Wilbur Peter King.
He looks like Babe Ruth is what he looks like over there.
There were some crazy nicknames for teams
I feel like I know this. And I can't call it.
I think it's the Bulldogs. I think it's just simple. It was Canton Bulldogs.
All right, you got it right.
Hey Pete, come up with something. Comes up with something hard next time.
Let it
go,
old timer.
There were some weird team names. One of the things about the NFL record and fact book, which only Chris Mad Dog Russo and I get, although I don't get it anymore because I got to the point where I just don't use it anymore. You get everything you need at your fingertips. They've got the standings all the way back to the first year of the NFL with the city name and the team name. And there are just some funky team names from back in those days. So the Canton Bulldogs, something I learned one time when perusing the NFL record and fact book.
So what do you think?
Double zero.
Yeah, okay, double. What about it? What?
Well, I just think they should do double zero instead of zero.
Oh, you just...
I don't like zero as much as I like double zero.
Okay, all right. I'm down with zero, though. A receiver doesn't want to wear double zero. You know, they want something that makes them look sleek and fast. So that's where they're going with that. Right, so I'm interested to see, you know, how it looks or whatever. I'm still not a fan of the whole number thing. I wish they went back to the old way, but we're here and this is where we're going. All right, so a zero, obviously not that big in the Hall of Fame.
I'm the one that's supposed to say get off my lawn.
I know, get off my lawn.
I kind of like it.
Okay, all right. Well, we're going opposite directions there. What's the most iconic number in NFL history? What is it?
For me, it's 32 because that was the Franco Harris number, the Immaculate Reception. Our house number was 32 when I was a kid. So to me, it's 32. I think to most people, it's probably 12.
Yeah, 32, though. Let's go through it. 32, him, Jim Brown, right? Who else are we missing that's 32, right? Who else is that?
Well, he who shall not be named.
You're right. The Juice. Bills. The Juice. The Hurts guy. Good old OJ, right? you're right. Okay, he was 32. Marcus Allen, 32. I know I'm missing a few others, but you're right. It's a pretty strong, Edgerrin James, 32, right? I mean, there's some strong numbers as far as running backs through history, 32. 12 is the one I do look at as to be the most iconic, just because, holy cow, it's actually crazy when you look at how many quarterbacks who have played or won the Super Bowl wearing that number. It's pretty astounding.
And I really do still hope that Aaron Rodgers chooses not to wear Joe Namath's number 12. I really do. I don't care that Namath says he can. You never can win if you're the one who had the number, because you come off as the height of petty. If you're like, no, that's my number, you can't wear it. Of course you're going to do the magnanimous thing. I think, and if Aaron Rodgers, I'm not going to criticize him if he does it, because, hey, J.J. Watt shouldn't have worn 99 with the Cardinals. Peyton Manning shouldn't have worn 18 with the Broncos. Numbers are retired for a reason. And I think it's on the player to do the thing that we would all say, wow. Because, again, the number doesn't define the player. The player defines the number. It is a number. It is something that is used to dehumanize. You are still the player in that uniform. It doesn't matter what number is on it. And so I hold out hope. I would have a much different view of Aaron Rodgers, Chris, if he doesn't wear number 12. Do you think he will?
I'm going to say he doesn't. I'm going to say that he's smart enough to read the room the right way there and go a different route. And maybe he goes to...
I think he will.
Yeah. You think he will wear 12? He'll say, screw it, I'm wearing my number?
How about 15? How about the Tebow number? Let's take a break. We'll wrap up this Wednesday edition of PFT Live right after this. Did a little research during the break as we were trying to figure out what we're going to talk about as we burn off the last minute or two of the show. Aaron Rodgers wore number 8 at Cal. Why not just re-embrace number 8?
Right.
Isn't that easy? That's the right thing to do. Aaron, I guess what I should say is, Aaron, go ahead and wear 12. Don't wear 8. Please wear 12. I want you to wear 12. That may be the only way I could convince him to not wear 12. Why not just wear 8? Be your own guy. Don't wear Joe Namath's number.
Gosh, I mean, for a guy that's as you know, hyper aware, as smart as he is, I would think he's going to figure that out. I was going to say at the end of the last break, I thought he wore a single digit at Cal. So 8 would look good on him, certainly. Maybe there's another number that we don't know about that he wants to go down. But, yeah, 12, I don't think it's a good look. Like you've said, I don't think it's a good look. It's not going to get things off on the right foot as far as, you know, bridging that gap between fan base and Aaron Rodgers' love affair there.
If all else fails, another darkness retreat and the number will come to him. At some point during the hallucinations from lack of light, he'll know.
What's the second most popular quarterback number? I mean, we hit on 12, but like after that, what's
it? 10?
10?
10? Is it 7?
It might be
7.
7. Yeah, 7's up there. I mean, yeah, it's hard to figure out what's. I think 7's probably it. 8's been pretty good with Aikman and Steve Young. You know, we got a few. 16, of course, with Montana, but he's the only one.
Has there been a great 19 other than Johnny Unitas?
No.
Is he the only 19?
Yeah. He's the only great 19. Mahomes is the only great 15, really.
We're done for today.
See ya. No, Bart Starr was 15. I was wrong. Bye. See ya.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.